Good evening and welcome to Attack the System. I'm your host, Keith Preston, here on Countercurrents. With me tonight is Velf Herferth. Velf has been on the program before, back when we were still on Voice of Reason. Welcome back to the program, Velf.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Now, I know that you've spoken about your own personal background in the past. You talked a little bit about that on the last interview we did, and you've spoken about it in other forums. But your story is really interesting. You've had a very interesting life. So why don't you just give us a brief summary of, you know, who you are, what you've been, what you've done, that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, obviously, as you can hear from my accent, I was born in Germany, lived there until I was 14, and then my parents decided to move to Iran. And so we packed everything up, went on an overland trip through then Yugoslavia, Turkey, into Iran. And it was a fascinating time in Tehran. I lived there for 3 years. I went to the German school. I had my first contacts with Americans over there. And I have to say, I was a really big fan of America when I was younger. Lived through the revolution, which was a real eye-opener, how soon a society can change from, yeah, peaceful and everything is all right to an uprising. And who would have thought that the Shah could be overthrown with the help? Well, the Shah had the backing of America. The mullahs decided to throw us out because my father was working for a big international company. Went back to Germany and, yeah, joined the NPD when I was 18. And I joined the NPD because I was really fascinated by the situation in Germany with all the demonstrations, freedom for Nicaragua, freedom for El Salvador. And nobody cared really that Germany was divided. And every time you brought it up, hey, what about freedom for Germany and unite Germany again, you were called a Nazi and a fascist. And yeah, so I was got really interested in politics, joined the NPD, and was working, well, was very active within it, did demonstrations, organized demonstrations, and was in the National Committee of the Young National Democrats. I met a girl then there, and she said, well, it's all getting a bit too hot for you here. Let's do a world trip. And yeah, we went with the Trans-Siberian Express through Russia into China. We were one of the first backpackers really in China, which also was an eye opener because it was like a time warp. And yeah, in really interesting time, traveled a year in Asia, came to Australia just actually to work there, make some money because I only had 20 bucks left. And yeah, met my ex-wife, married and stayed here. Joined the Australian Democrats, which was a libertarian party for a while. But, well, obviously we didn't see eye to eye because I didn't really agree with their social engineering politics. Then joined One Nation, which was a more right-wing populist party. And that was an interesting eye-opener as well, how ignorant some people were. One of my most interesting things was when I asked people, why do you like Australia so much? Have you seen any other country? And most of them said, no, why would I leave this beautiful country? I don't have to see anything else. So that really shocked me. And then about 1999, I did a bit of a stock take with all my politics. Where did I really end up? And I saw, well, 20 of activism, and I didn't go anywhere. I spent a lot of time and money in projects which just, yeah, didn't work. And I got in contact then with the National Anarchist Movement and Troy Southgate. Firstly, I was a bit thought, well, it's a bit of an oxymoron, national anarchism, that really doesn't work. But I got really fascinated and I got it, what national anarchism actually is. Yeah, and since then I'm pretty active in it, and that is it.
Okay, well, the National Anarchist Movement really got going about the time that you became involved in it, you know, which was about the time that I first discovered National Anarchism. It's interesting because you and Troy became interested in National Anarchism, having been activists on the right for a long time. I had been on the left for a long time before that, and I had developed many of the same conclusions, albeit originally coming at it from the other end. of the political spectrum, but we all ended up pretty much in the same place. In the years since then, how has national anarchism as a movement developed? Where do you, what have been some of its ins and outs, and where do you see it at the present time?
Well, at the present time, I really see national anarchism getting a foothold in the political landscape. You're right, when I started with national anarchism, when it started, became available, or not available, but when it developed, and a lot of ideas were founded in the last 10 years. The most interesting part about national anarchism, I find, is that, as you just mentioned, you came from the left, I came from the so-called right. For me, the left-right thinking doesn't exist anymore, and it's a real, may I say, spiritual experience that I'm not bound by any rules of right-wing or left-wing or libertarianism. National anarchism for me is the issues are important. That's what counts. And I don't really care if you're from the left or from the right, as long as we work together to make issues important, to work on issues. And yeah, I find that now national anarchism is really growing. It's not only growing in Australia. I think it's also, what I see, it's growing in America. And the interesting part is we have, as you said, left-wing, former left people, libertarians, animal rights activists, and survivalists. Everything is with us. And I love this diversity of opinions, diversity of activism, and we all work together and respect each other.
Well, I had pretty much the same experience when I became interested in national anarchism and other overlapping philosophies. What I had found in previous movements that I had been associated with, I'd been on the left for a long time, throughout most of the 80s on into the early 90s. For a time in the 90s, I had been a part of the libertarian movement in the U.S. I was never really on the right, except for, having flirted with some of the survivalist movements and the patriot movement and that kind of thing for a while in the late 90s. But what I noticed is that in a lot of different movements like that, you had a lot of ideologues. You had people that have this dogmatic view that we've got to have the correct position on everything. And, they're kind of like churches in that regard. It's all about these little sectarian disputes and schisms. And one thing that I liked about national anarchism when I discovered it is that it was one of the few, in fact, it's probably about the only political tendency that I've ever encountered where there's not a uniformity of opinion that's, that matters. It really is non-universalist in that sense. But you mentioned issues. You say as long as we focus on the issues, what do you see as the big issues that we should be focused on?
One of the biggest issues for me is the whole globalization, which is currently happening, or it's happening since about 30, 40 years in the world, that the system wants us to be all the same, a form of communism, what Karl Marx wanted, to make everything the same. Look, I traveled a lot. I love traveling, as you know, and I saw over 68 countries in this world. And it just disturbs me when I go to Vietnam and I see a McDonald's there or Kentucky Fried Chicken, or if I'm in South America and I see a Subway there. Everything is Americanized. Everything is Westernized. And I hate this. I really do hate this. I want that my kids can go into Vietnam and see the real Vietnam, and not like in a Disney World style. That's what really is one of the biggest issues for me. Also, that we all have the right to keep our cultures and live our cultures. I live here in Sydney, Australia, as you know, and we always have the Chinese festival, the Vietnamese festival. The Anglo-Saxon or the white people don't have a festival as such. Yeah. And I think if you would organize it, that would be racism. And that's one of the main issues for me.
Well, I know what you're saying about the effect of globalization. I know when I went to Europe for the first time, I've been overseas a good number of times, and The first time I went overseas, I remember the first thing I noticed is that you have all of this very old architecture in Europe, you know, hundreds of years old, you know, before the North American continent was even discovered by Europeans. And then right in the middle of all this very old architecture, you see the McDonald's arches and the KFC signs and Pizza Hut and Coca-Cola and all of that. You know, and I remember thinking to myself when I first went over there, I remember thinking, well, I came over here to see Europe, not to see America. You know, America's fine for Americans, but if I just wanted to stay, if I just wanted to see America, I'd stay in America. So I definitely can relate to that. But what about the people who throw epithets at tendencies like our own, where they say we're racist, we're fascist, we're Nazis, things like that? How do you respond to that?
I can understand why they do it, because they're brainwashed by the system to hate everything what doesn't agree with the system. For me, the Antifa is actually a useful tool for the system. When they come out and, for example, if an anti-fascist calls me a fascist, I always like that, because I am against big states. I am against the big governments. And fascism actually is for big government. So they obviously don't know what they're talking about. For them, it's just a word: racist, fascist, Nazi. I feel sorry for them. I understand them. And I try to get in dialogue with them, but they have this policy of saying, well, no platform for fascists, which is in a way fascist itself. And yeah, I feel sorry for them. But what the interesting part is, here in Australia, most of the anti-fascists are actually middle-class kids, which don't really know what's going on, and they think it's great that they stand up against the so-called Nazis and fascists. But in my opinion, they are the real fascists. And it's a sect thinking for them as well. We have groups here like Resistance and it's Democratic Alternative or Socialist Alternative. And I went to a couple of their meetings, and it reminds me a bit on it, like a church. And yeah, it's...
Well, I know in my own experiences, having come from the left, you know, I was on the inside of the left and saw that kind of thinking. And one of the reasons why I more or less disassociated myself from the left was having observed all that and seeing this kind of very doctrinaire, totalitarian type of thinking that you find in the left culture. And like you were saying, I know what today when I try to have a dialogue with some of these left-wing anarchist kids or these Antifa and things like that, it really is no different than when, you know, members of cults approach you on the street and they give you a tract or try to sell you a flower and want you to join their sect, or they come around knocking on your door trying to get you to come to their church and that kind of thing. That's really how it is. It's you can just, you know, you can see how deep the brainwashing is. As far as the state, the role of the state, I know there was an article published by Dan Kanukistan of New Resistance a while back talking about statism versus anti-statism. And when I had Craig Fitzgerald from the New York National Anarchist on, we talked about this as well. And in fact, I'm going to be bringing Dan on the show next week. And that's one of the things we're going to discuss. But on one hand, you know, philosophies like ours, we're non-universalist. You know, we believe in self-determination for all people. At the same time, we don't like big brother governments. You know, we are anarchists. But what about people who want a state or want to believe in some kind of statism? How should we relate to them?
Well, again, we have to understand. I understand these people because maybe they like Big Brother. Most of the so-called right-wing people here in Australia, they believe in the big Australian state and they believe in government. And they say, well, when we come into government, we chuck all the foreigners out. Well, good luck on them. Here in Australia, we got 22 million people and about 6-7 million are not even born in Australia. Good luck with that. It's a thinking of people that it's a security for them. Australia or Germany or the government, the state will look after me. I am totally opposed to that because for me, the state, the nation doesn't exist anymore. Here in Australia, look in Sydney, I got Chinese neighbors, I got Indian neighbors, and after 3 years living in Australia, they can become an Australian. So what is Australianism nowadays? I myself still a German. I don't believe in just changing my passport like I change underwear. When I was in America last year and I walked through St. Louis and seeing all the Mexicans and the black people, and yeah, I asked myself, what is Americanism nowadays? Is Americanism just McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Hollywood? Or what is the traditional American, what's traditional Americanism? Or in Germany, when I walk through Berlin and I see all these Turks and gypsies and other nations living in Germany, and they say they're Germans. So what is a German nowadays? And I think that goes for most of the Western world. And that's why I believe in, well, I can't change anything in chucking the people out, and I don't want these people to leave. I don't want to do them any harm. But so my conclusion is I will look after my own people. I will look after my tribe. We have a very thriving national anarchist community here in Sydney. We are not many, but we know what we are doing. We look after ourselves. We work together. And that's fine with me.
Well, I know that whenever I discuss some of our ideas from people from the left or from the right, the main criticisms we get from the left are the predictable ones, that we're fascist, we're racist, and we're Nazis. We've already talked about that. But one of the criticisms that have come from people on the right is that, well, national anarchism doesn't really effectively address the issue of things like mass immigration. They'll say, well, how are you guys really any different from libertarian, free market capitalists or leftists? If we put national anarchist principles into practice on a large scale, how would that affect the issue of immigration?
I don't think it would affect the issue of immigration. Let's be blunt here. Immigration always happened throughout the history of the world. We always had the Huns coming into Europe, and it always happened. And they integrated in a lot of ways to a certain extent. But for us, with the for the globalization nowadays happening and having our culture overrun by it, I can't agree with that. How national anarchism, the principle of national anarchism, would apply in a big scale? Well, I don't know that, to be quite honest. I just work it on a small scale, and it works for me.
Okay. Well, in that respect, do you think that we should be focused primarily on local forms of activism, things we can do in our personal lives or with other people that we know personally? Or do you see us as, do you think that we should be building some kind of movement that can actually work to be a political contender? Because if you look at the history of anarchist movements of other kind, we see on one hand that in the past anarchists have gone off and formed intentional communities and that kind of thing. And at the same time, we've also seen examples like in Spain and some other countries where anarchism became a mass movement in many ways. Do you see which direction do you think we should be headed in, or do you think we should be trying to do both?
I believe we should try to do both. Firstly, I believe in local activism. Yeah, I'm a member of the Bushfire Brigade here. I'm a member of the local neighborhood association. We have a food collective where we go and buy the food in the market, so it's cheaper, so we don't rely on big supermarkets. We got a meat collective. So that's one way how to act and spread the word of national anarchism. The other one is over the internet, on Facebook, on all the social medias, getting in contact and build a movement. I agree with that. When I travel, my holidays are spent traveling, and I try to go overseas and meet people like you, like Troy Southgate, and just not only connect over the net, but also talk with them in person. And the word is spreading. We are getting more and more people from the left and from the right joining the national anarchist movement, at the moment mainly on the internet and on Facebook, but there is activism coming through. We are actually planning a big international national anarchist event next year, where we get out from behind our keyboards and on the street, and I hope it will be a good success.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll take a brief break and we'll return in just a moment and continue our conversation with Velf Herberth. Back in a few.
All of the enemies that we now face are internal. And the biggest enemies that we face are in our own minds. Are the feeling that we shouldn't say this, shouldn't write this, shouldn't speak this, shouldn't think this. These are the biggest enemies that we have. Only when you can break through the carapace of the mass media with all of its multiple gorgon-like heads and its hydra-like amphitheatre, only when you can break through that using the internet have you a chance to embolden the necessary vanguard of our own population.
Okay, welcome back to Attack the System here on Countercurrents. I'm your host, Keith Preston. We're continuing our conversation with Velf Herberth. Velf, you recently had a book published, Life in the Political Wilderness. It's a great book, I know, because I was one of the proofreaders that was commissioned by the publisher. What has been the response to that book?
The response was great, and I am really feeling honored that when people write to me and said, listen, Velf, I read your book. I might not agree with you 100%, but you make me think. That was the whole idea about it. When Flavio approached me and said, listen, I would like to publish your writings, I said, well, who's going to read it? Because it's all available free on the internet, and who is interested what a German has to say who lives in Australia? But the response of people was fascinating in a way that, yeah, as I just mentioned before, they say, we not agree with you, but you make us think. And that was the whole idea about my writings, that I don't want that people agree with me 100%, because then I'm just preaching to the converted. I want people from the left wing, the right wing, from the libertarian movement, everybody really to read it and just get more aware what's happening in this bloody world. Now, people are running around like sheep, complaining and whinging, but not doing anything. I see it when I go to meetings and say, listen, let's put some money in towards some project. And they say, I don't have enough money. But then you see them smoking and drinking like mad, and they have money for that. So, yeah, that was the idea about my book. And I don't know if it sells well. Flavio can answer that. But here in Australia, I got a bit of a following with, and yeah, I think it put national anarchism in a lot of ways also on the map for a lot of people.
What else do you think we can do to build national anarchism into a political contender, if you will, into a viable political philosophy that people find attractive and that continues to build in terms of numbers, you know, in terms of quantity of people, in terms of quality of people?
Living by example. I think that is the most important thing, that what we believe in, that we actually act on it and do it in ourselves. And when people see that it's working for us, they will come to us. I know Craig in New York, he's living on a farm, and he's practicing national anarchism. I have the greatest admiration of this guy. And Troy Southgate, what he's doing in England with his book service and organizing political events. Again, this is what we have to do. And I wish that all the people which believe in national anarchism go actually out and once a week just do something in their local community. and show the world we are not only just internet politicians, and we just not only put out one article after the other, one book after the other, but we live what we are, what we believe in. I think that is the biggest example. And if you look at organizations like Hamas in Palestine, they did the same thing. They went out, helped their community, and grew into a mass movement. And I think if we do that all over the world as national anarchists, that will help.
Well, I know that you have plenty of experience of trying to work within the system. You mentioned your involvement with some political parties in Germany and in Australia. And I believe you actually worked in the Australian Parliament at one point. Is that correct?
That's correct. I worked there with One Nation in the New South Wales Parliament for a while. And if you see what's going on there, on television, you always see that the politicians scream at each other and have so-called different opinions. But as soon as the cameras is gone, they go to the bar and drink a beer. It's just a game. It's just a show to entertain the masses and think, we have different opinions here, which is actually not correct. For me, politicians in the Western world are just managers for global companies. They just want to make sure that the books are all balancing and that there's enough money to run the government. I don't know how it's in America, but here in Australia, everything is getting privatized, private roads, private hospitals. I don't even know where my tax money goes anymore, except keeping up the politicians' wages and keep them in a good lifestyle. We have some sort of resistance here in Australia from the left. The right wing more or less doesn't exist, to be quite honest. They're just on Stormfront and on the internet. And otherwise, there is no resistance really to the system.
So I know that here in America, we've seen a growth of dissident political movements in the last few years. In last week's broadcast, I talked a little bit about that. There's Occupy Wall Street, there's the Tea Parties, there's the Ron Paul movement. Is there anything comparable in Australia at present?
No. Absolutely not. There's a Liberal Party, the Labour Party, the Nationals, and that's about it. We have something what we call the preference voting system, which makes it very hard to get for any other big parties to get, or so for any party to get into Parliament. Of course, we have the Greens in the Senate, but that's another story. But everything, every time you come up with an organization which actually challenges the system somehow finds a way to shut you down. One Nation was called racist, fascist, Nazis, and all the people just, didn't like it because the media said so.
I know that here in the United States, there are always efforts underway to organize minor political parties. We've had groups like the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party that have been around for a number of years now. We've got a Green Party here. We've also got a party that was formed in the last few years called the American Third Position. I personally am skeptical of the ability of political parties to make change through things like elections and that sort of thing. Do you see things like voting, having parties that run for offices, do you see that as ever being effective or on any level, maybe at the level of local government or regional or provincial government, if not at the national level?
On a local government, we might have an impact. But on a national level, I don't think so. What did I read the other day? That Obama collected close to $1 billion for his election campaign. That's absurd. Some countries do not even have so much money in their budgets, and there's one party amassing this kind of money for one person to be reelected. What chances do small parties have? Unfortunately, the people in this world, or in the Western world, are brainwashed by the media, brainwashed by television and radio. We can't get through to that.
Well, how should we get our message out then? I mean, I agree with you about the power of the media. I was explaining on this broadcast on a previous program that I think the American political system very closely resembles a professional wrestling match. where it's you have these fake combatants that are just basically playing characters. The outcome is predetermined. It's all just a big show. That's certainly how American politics works. It sounds like that's the way it works in Australia as well. I know when I've been to Europe and observed European politics, it doesn't seem to be much different there. So how do we go about getting our message out? What medium should we use?
Well, we got social media. That's one way. The other one is local activist groups. I really believe in reaching out to all radicals. It doesn't matter if they're on the radical right or radical left. I just posted something on my website about an anarchist which was jailed in America, and because she wouldn't testify in a grand jury. So I don't know how your system works over there. Her name is Lee Lyon Plante, and nobody in the Western media really reports about it. But then you have somebody like Pussy Riot in Moscow being jailed for playing in a church, and everybody jumps up and down. I actually will write to that woman in America, and I will put some National Anarchist books in because she wants some books. And that's what I believe in. We should reach out to all radicals. And if we have all radicals united, then we can challenge the system.
Well, that's interesting. How what kind of efforts have you made to reach out to different types of radical groups? Because I've done the same thing myself. But what has been your experience with that? What kind of response have you gotten?
Well, I went to a lot of the so-called socialist meetings here in Sydney, and I argued with them and debated with them. And it was always fine with, we actually agreed on more things than we disagreed. But as soon as you mention the word national anarchism, they just fall back into their political cage and call you a Nazi and a fascist. Having said that, we actually have some people from the so-called left now working with us in Sydney, and they agree that we are a pretty good group. They're always surprised how tolerant we are, which I find interesting. And the other thing what we do is we go to demonstrations. We had a big APAC meeting here a couple of years ago, and we actually formed the Black Bloc. So we came dressed as anarchists and had banners and everything. And first the people were all, yeah, here's the anarchists, good on you. And then when they found out who we are, they called us Nazis and fascists. So again, it's a way to get through to it. And yeah, I think that's what we have to do. Reach out to them, go to their meetings, talk to them, and just show them that we are not these evil people.
Well, one thing that I have found interesting is that there have been a lot of people who have come into our camp from the left. Some of them are people I've had on some of my programs before. Others are people that I've corresponded with. And a lot of people have told me that when they first encountered our movement, that they were expecting something completely different. They have told me that, yeah, when I first met you guys, you know, I thought I wouldn't be accepted because I've come from this kind of background, or, you know, I have these ideas or whatever. And, you know, I thought you guys were all fascists and Nazis and so forth. And then they'll say that, you know, but after having been involved with us for a while, after having talked to us, they say, well, you guys are actually one of the more tolerant, one of the more open-minded of any of the different kinds of political sects that they have ever encountered. And they'll say, they don't get why we're labeled this kind of reactionary, intolerant, totalitarian type of movement. Have you experienced that as well? Where, you know, when people really start to encounter us, some of those kinds of perceptions start to change.
Most definitely. I went not so long ago onto a rally where a lot of the lefties were there, and I just put my thing forward, and I just said, I'm here because of the issue, and the issue was environmentalism. And I always say to them, listen, this is not your issue. This belongs to all the people. Environmental issues are not just green issues or lefty issues. It's also an issue for me as a person. And I try to personalize everything what I do. I just say, listen, I'm part of the struggle. I'm part of this world. I'm interested in that. And people get that. The whole labeling of left-wing also that they call us Nazis and fascists, it's just an attempt by people to shut us down so nobody talks to us. So we have to find ways around it. And as you said, a lot of the guys say, well, I didn't expect you to be so tolerant. I think you're a hater, or I thought you're a hater. So I'm not a hater. I'm passionate about certain issues. I don't preach anymore like I did when I was younger. I just stand my ground. And again, a lot of people might not agree 100% with me and with National Anarchism, but they're more open now to talk to us and to discuss us and, yeah, be part of a demonstration.
Well, one thing you touched on just a moment ago, and I think is very important, is that we do offer support to all enemies of the system, irrespective of what their specific beliefs may be or their specific ideas are. You mentioned the case of Leah Plant. She's an American anarchist that's was sent to prison recently for refusing to testify in front of a grand jury. And I actually posted some information about that particular case on Attack the System. If you go to attackthesystem.com, you can read more about that. Or if you subscribe to the National Anarchist Movement, to their Facebook page, there's some information about that as well. And I do think that it's important to reach out to radicals all across the spectrum, like you were saying. Have you had much effort at reaching out to people of other races, people outside the white nationalist community or outside the white left?
Most definitely. I love traveling, as I said before, and I love the Asian countries like Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam. I'm fascinated by how they live, what their culture is, how they interact with each other. And it's amazing when you go, for example, in Laos, in Phnom Penh, into the slums, and you see the people, how poor they are, but how happy they are in another way as well, because they're not bound on materialistic things as much as we are in the West. I believe we have some national anarchists in America which are black, and I think that is fantastic. We have so many different cultures and races in this world, and the diversity is what I love. I got friends which are Indian, Chinese, Aborigines here in Australia, and I'm friends. And I work with them in a lot of ways so they can build their own communities. They all know my stance. They all know that I'm a national anarchist and I'm looking after my tribe. But that doesn't mean that I don't interact with other races and with other people and with other sexualities. I got an acquaintance or a friend which is homosexual. Well, for God's sake, he's born homosexual. Why shouldn't I talk to him and just treat him like every normal human being? And I think it's amazing and ignorant of people say, well, I'm only talking to my kind. I don't want anything. Are the white races better than any other race? This whole white nationalist movement with their supremacy thinking, it's just makes me sick, to be quite honest.
Well, I know at Attack the System, we have a wide assortment of people from all different kinds of backgrounds who participate in our projects. We have some people that originate from the far right in various forms. We've got people of different ethnic backgrounds, white, black, American Indian, Iranian, Indian, and others. We have people of different sexual orientations, different religious beliefs and backgrounds. And, you know, it all seems to work fine. What do you think is the common thread that we can appeal to when it comes to reaching out to radicals of all different stripes or people of different races and ethnic groups or religions or whatever who may have some of the same grievances against the system? What do you think is the common thread that ought to unify some of this diversity of opinion and diversity of opposition?
I think the common thread is simply that we are against the system, that we are for our communities, that we want the best for our people and for our tribes. And it doesn't really matter if you're left-wing or right-wing or libertarian, a black, yellow, green, gay, homosexual. I don't care what they are, because we all want the best for our community, and that we stand up against tyranny, that we stand up against Big Brother telling us all the time what to do, that we are capable of looking after ourselves. And that, I think, is the common thread. So the common goal, what we all, the radicals, have in mind.
Okay, well, that's a good note to end this segment on. We will return in just a few moments and continue our discussion with Valve Herforth. This is Keith Preston for Attack the System here on Countercurrents.
What will it take for the bulk of people who leave Western universities to have the middle or common denominator view of the people in this room? It will take an earthquake. But it's not that difficult to achieve once you get people thinking in a dissentient way. This involves very much raising the game. I personally believe people agree with ideas long before they move towards them. They have an instinctual saying of yes. They say yes to the idea before they've completely worked out all of the formula for themselves. Countercurrents of this world exist to provide the formula for people after they've said yes, after they've put forward their first step upon the route to identity and the politics of identity and the religion of identity.
Welcome back to Attack the System. This is the third installment of this week's program. I'm continuing our conversation with Valve Herforth. Valve, what are some other movements around the world that we can draw on for inspiration? You know, I know you're very observant of different movements from around the world. You really don't have any choice given how well traveled you are. I think you mentioned the example of Hamas earlier. What are some other prototypes for that we might be able to draw inspiration from?
There are plenty of movements and organizations which in the world which inspire me. Hamas, as I just mentioned, is a classical example of what they do. I might not agree with everything what they say, but the tactics they're doing I find it is worth copying. We got the free comradeships in Germany, which are a little bit like us national anarchists, but they believe in the big state still, but they create their own society, their own system within the system, their own values and goals. In Mexico, you got a really good group, the Zapista movement. You got them all over the world, and I think we just have to look at these groups for inspiration.
What do you think are some other issues that we should be focused on? I know that, you know, there's the big issue, and that's globalization, global tyranny that really oppresses people of all races, of all ethnic groups, of all religions, of all classes, of all nationalities. You know, that's something that we all can unite around, I think. But what are some other issues that are out there that you think we ought to be focused on as primary issues?
Another big issue for me is that the system always tries to tell us how to live our lives with laws. You know, one of my rules is try to break a law once a day at least, even if it's only speeding. It's the nanny state, how more and more laws are coming in to tell us what to do, in the cameras everywhere, in the name of safety and to fight crime, that our everyday life is controlled and watched by people. If you use the internet nowadays, that you get targeted advertising on what you believe in, what to shop, because they know exactly what you do. Our life is so controlled, and I'm so sick of it. Yeah, and people are just like sheep. They like it. And that's another big issue, that we have to become independent again, that we can be self-determined what we do in our daily lives without every step controlled by a law.
Well, I know where you're coming from with the question of the nanny state. It's interesting because, you know, being an American by birth and having lived in the United States for most of my entire life, I've really seen the expansion of the police state in the United States in my own lifetime. In fact, I know I was talking about having traveled to Europe previously. I know when I went to Europe, when I spent a lot of time in Holland. And when I was in Holland, I think I, you know, would see a police officer, you know, here. I mean, I saw them on the street, sure, but I just see one here and there. They weren't particularly conspicuous. Here in the United States, I know any time I leave my residence, everywhere I go, I see police. I see police cars everywhere. I see police on the street everywhere. You know, it's almost like we have a police force for every block. Do you see this as a problem that's gotten worse over time? Because I know you grew up in Germany, you spent some time in Iran, you've spent a lot of time in other countries. Do you see that the police state, as it's grown in the West, as something that's become more severe in recent years?
Most definitely. It's all about the war on terror. And it gives the system a good excuse to put more police and more, yeah, even the army on the street. How people can take it and agree with it, I don't understand it. The war on terror is just a big excuse to control our society more with force. And yeah, I always find it interesting when you have, for example, in Africa, the Arab Spring, when all these people rose up and overthrew their governments, and the Western world was saying, hey, fantastic, great, you fight for freedom. Same time when we go on the street in the Western, in Australia or in America, they put the police against us and yeah, violently suppress our demonstrations. So I find it a bit hypocritical.
Oh, I know that you've had a project going on for some time in Australia called the Sydney Forum. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And is that project still going?
The Sydney Forum was founded in 2000 by me and by Jim Salomon, another activist here in Australia. And we ran it for every year. And it was really good at the beginning. But at the end, we actually closed it down this year because we just came to the conclusion that the platform is not right anymore. People do not want to sit in a room for one day and listen to different speakers. Unfortunately, this is the case. We had to close it down. We are working on something else at the moment where we make it more of a weekend event with music and with food stalls and more on a social level, not only on a political level. So unfortunately, yeah, we had to cancel the event for this year, but we will be back next year with a bigger and better one.
Well, what are some other activities that you have going on currently in Australia? What other kinds of projects are you working with?
The other project, as I mentioned before, we have a meat collective and we got a fruit collective where we have 10 families in our group. There's other groups out there which go, for example, every for Saturday, I go down to the big Sydney market, buy fruits and veggies for everybody for the week. Then we come here, then we split them up in my place or whoever buys it. And it's a good get together in the mornings for us. The meat collective is the same thing. I'm also having a book service, which I started about 2 years ago on my own, where I just buy books from, yeah, Troy Southgate, for example, from Flavio, and make them available to everybody in Australia which wants them. Because you can't buy books like Troy's book here. You can't buy them in bookshops, and it makes it hard to buy it over the internet because of the distance and how much it costs to actually send them over here. That's another project we are running. We are still having our local meetups here where we clean parks up and we help neighborhood organizations. And I'm also active in the local fire brigade.
Do you go about discussing your beliefs with people that you encounter just in your normal day-to-day life? Because I know a lot of times, for practical reasons, a lot of people have to be somewhat quiet about their radical views when it comes to how they relate to people on their job or in their neighborhood and things like that. Have you ever been able to really discuss some of your ideas with people, just ordinary everyday people that you meet in the course of day-to-day life? And if so, what kind of reaction have you gotten?
Firstly, it shows in what kind of a free society we live in if you can't talk what we believe in. Yeah, that's the first thing. I know here in Australia there's a lot of people which have beliefs and they can't say it because it would threaten their job or they would be fired from their workplace. I find it sad that we live in a society like this. Myself, I'm pretty well known in Australia for my views, and yeah, my pictures and my articles is all over the internet, so I'm not really afraid of saying what I say. I'm not saying anything illegal. I just practice the right of free speech. In my friends, my circles, my neighborhood knows what I believe in, and it's always funny when article comes out or the anti-fascists post something and say, oh, yes, Ralph Herford is a neo-Nazi. They just laugh because they know me personally. They know that this is not the case. They know that I have radical views and a lot of them agree with them. So the best thing actually is to go out and just tell people what you believe is. That's the best defense. Because if you're in a workplace and then it comes out that you are a greenie, a lefty, a Nazi, whatever you are, then the workplace actually has a reason to, criticize you, because they don't know what you really are. But if they know what you are and they agree to disagree with you, I think you're safe.
Well, I know I've had experiences with that where I've been involved in radical politics for probably about 25 years, which is my whole adult life, and I've been in a lot of different kinds of movements from both the left and the right, and because of that, I've accumulated a lot of, contacts and friends and associates from different movements over the years, and, I still have friends from the left that I've known for 20 or 25 years, back in the day when I was involved in the protest movement over the war in Central America. And what's funny is that, I'm well known for my own beliefs as well. I'm all over the internet. And, if you Google my name, you can find all kinds of stuff about me and my various projects. And you can find a lot of stuff that's very critical of me from the other side as well. And in fact, it was funny because not long ago, I had a coworker ask me about some of that. They were saying, well, I see you're all over the internet. And they were saying, one thing I've noticed is that people either love you or they hate you, one of the two. And I'm like, yeah, well, if that's the case, then that means I'm effective in getting my message across. It's when you want to inspire a passionate reaction in people that you communicate with, even if it's passionately negative, I think is better than just the humdrum and no response at all. Because I think if people are lukewarm in their feelings about you, in many ways, you're not really getting any kind of message across. If you're going to be a radical, if you're going to be someone that's against the system, then, one of the, consequences of that, or whether it's a negative or positive consequence, however you want to assess it, is that people are going to disagree with you, and people are going to take exceptions to certain things that you say that they don't agree with, and that's fine. I don't mind at all when people express criticism of my own views, I would prefer that people be civil and intelligent if they try to disagree with me, but I do expect that there's going to be disagreement. I do expect there's going to be criticism. I do expect that there's going to be negative criticism in such a way that's not very intelligent or not very informed. That's just one of the consequences for what I do. Let me throw this question out. let's say that in the future, you know, national anarchism and other similar philosophies, and I've noticed, by the way, over the years, that there are really a lot of other ideas out there being thrown around in various circles that are very similar to national anarchism, even if it's not called that. I know among the native people here in the United States, there's a neo-tribalist movement. We have the primitivist anarchists that are about going out and trying to be self-sufficient and live off the land. You know, there are forms of black nationalism that have similar ideas to national anarchism. And there's, you know, people in other movements as well. Let's say that movements like national anarchism, really did become a large influential movement, you know, something that in different countries had, you know, hundreds of thousands or even millions of adherents. What do you think our end game should be, or maybe not so much what it should be? What do you think the end game would be? You know, how do you see a society that's heavily influenced by national anarchism, where, you know, national anarchism is one of the most prevailing political currents? What do you think a society like that would look like? Like, what is your vision?
Well, my vision in this case is that we respect each other. I think this is the biggest one. We all have different experiences, different life experiences. We grew up in different social economic groups. So we are all different. Yeah, this whole myth of the liberal democracy that we are all the same and equal is just bullshit. Excuse for my French. But in a national anarchist society, I just see that we respect each other's opinion, that we can work together, that that they see that we are people which look after our communities. And it doesn't really matter if that is called national anarchism, tribalism, whatever. For us, they're just words. Our actions speak louder than what just a group's name is. And if we can achieve that, that would be an ideal society of national anarchism, that you have societies of black people, of American Indians, of Indians, that they live in their societies and respect other societies.
But how do you answer the questions? Because I know, you know, I was an anarchist a long time before I became interested in national anarchism or in the new right or the alternative right or any of the kinds of tendencies that I'm associated with now. But I know, you know, throughout my entire lifetime, the question I've always gotten, well, in a national anarchist society, who would build the roads, or what would you do about crime, or what about if there was a military invasion or something like that? How do you get a lot of questions like that, and how do you answer some of those questions?
Well, I get these questions, and they're mostly from people which believe in the in big government and believe in the nation state, where they're used to that other people look after them. It's, for me, it's very simple. If I see that a road has to be built, I will get together with my tribe and build the bloody road. If I get attacked, I would ask other tribes to help us out. And if they get attacked, we would help them. It's always easy to look at big government so they do things for you. I think we as national anarchists have to be prepared to go out and do it ourselves. That's as simple as that. And if you get enough people together to build a road, you can build a road. If you want to build a hospital for your tribe, you get together and build a hospital. Look at the Amish in America. They build their houses. They come together and build a house for one of their members, or build a church or whatever. It can be done. Always to look at big government to look after them, after the people, I don't think is the answer. I want to do it myself. I want to do it with my friends, with my tribe. I want to be proud of what I build and not just look at the government and say, listen, I need a road, I need a hospital, you do it for me.
Well, one way I answer that question is I say, well, what is Big Brother government doing for you today? You know, I'll point out, you know, okay, we have in America, we have this massive military industrial complex. Well, is that really keeping anyone safe? Are they really defending the country, or are they out attacking other countries and inviting terrorist reprisals against Americans? You know, or I'll look at the economy. Are they doing anything to create a productive economy, or are they running the economy into the ground with, you know, outrageous public debt and things like that? or I'll look at crime. I'll say, you know, in spite of the fact that we have this massive police state, crime is out of control in our own society. So what, you know, there was an American paleoconservative who's now regrettably deceased, by the name of Sam Francis. He once said that the system we have now is it's anarcho-tyranny. You know, it's on one hand, you know, we have all this government, but, you know, government is falling down on the job on all of the things that it's ostensibly supposed to be doing, like defending the borders or repressing crime or managing the economy and things like that. On the other hand, it's sticking its nose into everything else. You know, it's trying to regulate, you know, whether you can smoke in a bar, or whether you wear your seatbelt or not, or how you raise your kids, or, you know, what your kids are taught in school and things like that. So, you know, it's like, is government really doing anything for us at all? So, you know, it's obvious that the system is broken. All right.
It most definitely, because if you look in the Western democratic countries, so Germany, France, America, Australia, it's all falling apart. You know, we always look at government to look after ourselves, but it's all falling apart. Look at the European Union. Look at Germany. It's not really working out. Big governments, in my opinion, doesn't bring anything to the people except control. That's about it.
Well, you mentioned how, you know, one way we can go about practicing some of these ideas is just through trying to create a culture of respect where we recognize yet respect each other's differences. You know, I know I was talking to a relative a while back, and they were asking me about some of my views. You know, they were talking about having read some of my stuff on the internet, and they were saying, well, you seem like you've moved somewhat rightward in recent times. And they were saying, well, yeah, I remember you used to hate the right. You used to hate this, that, and the other thing, you know. And I was trying to explain, well, no, I don't really hate anything anymore. You know, with the beliefs I have now, the philosophy I have now, you know, I understand that it's okay to be different. You know, I'm not a universalist anymore. You know, I look at it like, yeah, there are going to be people who think differently from me, who are going to have polar opposite beliefs about me, from me about a lot of things. And I'm okay with that now. And I wasn't always like that when I was younger. I mean, there's still a lot of people that I criticize very harshly. You know, I think their ideas may be, wrong. Like, I know I criticize some of the reactionary sectors of the left quite a bit for their narrow-mindedness, you know, but I don't really hate any point of view, like I might have at one point. You know, I know in my own life, one thing that I do to practice this is that, you know, I deal with college students a lot in one of my other lives. And, you know, I try to, encourage dialogue and the sharing of ideas and opinions among people with all different kinds of beliefs and all kinds of backgrounds. You know, I have students, for example, some of them are, you know, liberal, some are conservative, you know, some, they come from all different kinds of ethnic backgrounds. And I encourage everyone to express their own ideas, you know, no matter how unconventional and no matter how offensive it might be to other people, and try to build this kind of culture of respectful dialogue. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Is there anything you wanted to add to our conversation this evening, Velf, before we have to sign off?
No, just the last thing, what you just said about different people, different opinions. I think it's great that we have different opinions, because the day we don't have different opinions, I think we are all, we can close society down. I love to hear different views, different opinions, because it makes me grow. My political thinking will never stop to evolve, and that's what I find is great. Otherwise, I just want to say thank you very much for having me on your show again, and I hope I just didn't ramble on too much.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you for coming on the program, and I'll definitely want to have you on again. So thank you for being here, Velf. And with that, this is Keith Preston for Attack the System on Countercurrents, and we'll see you next week. Have a good evening.